Welcome to On the Air with Accounting. Today, I'm Dan Hood. Most firms in their histories have a major engagement opportunity that they either passed on and wish they hadn't, or that they tried for and didn't get. Here to talk about large opportunity pursuit and how to be better at it is Gail Crosley, one of the foremost growth consultants to accountants in the country. Gail, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Dan, very much.
Let's dive right in. What are people doing wrong about in terms of pursuing these large opportunities? What are the big mistakes they're making?
Let's see. How much time do we have?
We'll do a day-long symposium on it. But.
Well, it's so interesting because when I came from corporate America and started this practice, I was shocked and amazed and somewhat horrified at times about the things that were, known as like best practices that weren't best.
Right.
And I came from the large computer environment from IBM, which is where these big fish took sometimes 1 to 2 years to close was a typical selling cycle and were multiple millions of dollars. But the interesting thing about this is that the best practices for the big fish also work on the smaller fish. So if you can do the big ones, you can do the smaller ones.
Gotcha.
Probably the number one issue is the lack of respect of the selling cycle, the process, and the timing and rhythm of it.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. So firms, for example, and people in them think, well, I'm in busy season. I'm going to put this big fish or this little fish, I'm going to put this fish on the back burner for now until I come up for air. And that is probably one of the biggest mistakes because you are supposed to be leading in persuasion and influence and leading the process and leading the buyer through the process. And if you disappear or are not respectful of that timing and rhythm, that thing will evaporate. And they'll say, golly, I don't really remember why I did talk to her and why I was so excited about it. Golly, I have this other thing now that I'm excited about. So that's probably number one.
Gotcha. Well, that's pretty significant. We hear that in mergers as well, where a firm will say, well, we'll talk after tax season or after business season.
Mm-hmm.
And that sort of sends a message to, in that case, the potential acquirer, but also in this case, a prospect or an engagement opportunity. They're not a priority for you.
You're not important. You're not important to me. Mm-hmm. I've got other things that are more important.
Gotcha. Are there any other major mistakes you see?
Probably the one that I get the most pushback on because it's been around for so long and it's misperceived is when you have the first meeting with a prospect that you should go in alone. And I must tell you, I have had rotten tomatoes thrown at me and all kinds of other things when I say this because it has been for time immemorial known that, well, you take two people. Why? Well, one knows audit, the other knows tax. Or one can write and the other can talk. One can watch the body language and the other can be memorializing the call. And nothing could be further from the truth because when you go in alone, one-on-one, it creates the intimacy that you need immediately with the prospect and importantly because selling cycles are called racing the clock. You don't have 20 years to develop something. You've got, maybe 20 days or whatever. You've got to get in. You've got to establish that intimacy as quickly as you can. That promotes the buyer opening up and telling you things that they would not say in a crowd or in a two-on-one.
Right.
And you can even see a picture, like I have one in my workshop, Landing the Big Fish workshop, and we have one picture that's a one-on-one, and then the second picture is a two-on-one, and you can just see visually the dynamics of the prospect shutting down. Now there's two people ganging up on me, I'm not going to tell you anything. And so that's probably the most common mistake.
We could probably spend a lot of time on other mistakes. Maybe we'll get to some more of them. But let's step back a little bit and look at the when we talk about large opportunities. How can a firm know if a large opportunity is too large for them? A lot of accounting firms are small. In some cases, I mean, there are obviously some engagements they look at. Yeah, I'm a three-person firm. There's no way I'm going to audit GM. So that's not an opportunity I'm going to pursue. But how do you know how large is too large, or what's the right space for you to figure out what a big opportunity should be for you?
I will tell you that all opportunities that come my way are equally interesting until proven otherwise.
Okay.
So the first thing that you do to determine whether an opportunity is right for you, be it not only size, but technical background and capabilities or bandwidth or other factors like culture and, those sorts of things, is to qualify something we call qualifying the lead.
Mm-hmm.
And in qualifying the lead, you ask five questions of a prospect that basically teases out or pulls out all the material that you need to determine whether this is a fit or not. And the fit or not has to do with, and this is important, a two-way street. Many of our accountants will go out and, you know, be irrationally exuberant about the potential of, wow, we want to do business with fill in the blank. And they get their happy ears on and they only want to hear what they want to hear. And this is unfortunate because it enables a dynamic between the buyer and seller where the buyer is left with the impression that you will sell them anything under any condition because you're so excited about it.
Right.
And if you put that excitement in a bag for just a moment and be consciously due diligence about in your demeanor and in your questions, what will happen there is that it will come across to the buyer that this is a two-way street. We might or might not be good for each other as a match at this point in time,
right.
And we're going to discern that together, and that's a much better place to be.
Gotcha. Excellent. All right, so you assume, let's assume you get to the point where you say, this is, we've qualified this lead, this is definitely something we want to pursue. Then you could talk about some of the differences between pursuing a big opportunity and just a standard, a smaller client, a smaller engagement. How would you differentiate between those two?
They have the same steps.
Okay.
The steps there are more of them in large opportunities because you typically have more time. They are longer in duration. And the other thing is that they are complex because there are lots of competitors and lots of decision makers. And when I say lots, it could be two or more. And whenever you have two or more decision makers, you have power and politics.
Right.
And whenever you have competitors, and especially very savvy competitors, you're in a strategic realm. So both of these require strategy, and in you're selling strategic solutions. And when you're in smaller opportunities, they're usually pretty tactical, one decision maker, very short in time frame,
Gotcha. And
not as sophisticated in terms of the dynamics of it.
Gotcha. So many of the things you're going to be doing are similar, but you're probably doing less of them. It's a shorter time frame to do the smaller engagements, the smaller opportunities.
Truly. And less persuasion and influence, because if you're persuading and influencing one person, that's different than persuading and influencing three people who all have their own hidden agendas.
Right.
They have their own dynamics, interpersonal dynamics. Two of them doesn't like the third one, all that stuff. You have to find all that out,
right,
so that you can tiptoe around and navigate and making sure you're bringing all three people on board and that kind of thing.
Gotcha. So that's interesting. I mean, I want to talk about that a little bit in terms of not the specifics of why those two people don't like that other person, but that certainly, like you said, you're going to run into that.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds like, or it can feel like, each one of those is a sort of custom process, you know, a customized process for that we have to adjust to this particular client or this particular opportunity. Are there ways to standardize this kind of large opportunity?
Oh, yes, absolutely. There's a process and a methodology and what I'll call generally accepted growth principles, a set of principles that are as immutable as doing an audit or a tax project. And when you know those, then you can navigate through the entire process. For example, qualifying the lead.
Right.
You qualify early. That's the first thing you do.
Right.
You qualify often. In
other
words, you qualify with each individual decision maker or influencer individually, one-on-one. And you qualify hard, which means that you ask the very hard questions that you don't want to ask, you're afraid to ask. You get the elephant in the room identified. You talk through it with the buyer. Example, you are the only firm that is an out-of-town firm bidding on the business. It's obvious to you, it's obvious to the buyer. If you don't ask about that then and pretend like it doesn't exist or it's going to go away, then you are not smoking out what a potential objection might be.
Right.
Or a potential strength might be. That could be your advantage.
Right.
And you would never know it if you didn't say to the buyer, let me ask you something. You have three in-town firms and an out-of-town firm. Let's talk about it. So there are principles all along the way like
gotcha.
That.
So there are, you can set up a process, you then have to,
oh yeah.
You know, the questions you know you need to ask those kind of questions, what questions they may be will vary
mm-hmm.
from engagement to engagement, but knowing you have to ask them, is a way you can standardize. So that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Let me take a step back and say, you know, should firms be pursuing these kind of large engagements? I mean, in some cases, well, I guess it can vary from opportunity to opportunity, but it feels like a lot of them may well end up being sort of one-offs, you know, maybe a long project, but a single project, you know, that doesn't, it's not a recurring revenue. Some of them obviously will be recurring, but is there a benefit to aiming for larger engagements?
Absolutely. Especially if you are aiming not randomly for, you know, let's do an oil and gas engagement today and then we'll do a real estate firm tomorrow.
Right.
But this is where the strategy, the tactical the pursuit of an opportunity, one opportunity, hooks into your longer term strategy about where are you going.
Right.
And so let's take oil and gas, for example. Once you get into the oil and gas world, as you get better and better at it, you will naturally become have an opportunity for larger opportunities.
Right.
And as a result, specialization tends to drive, therefore, the opportunity for larger opportunities.
Gotcha.
And as a result, firms start going up market as they specialize more and more because they get better and better. And if they get better not only on the technical side, but also if they get better on the pursuit side, then they can really go up market and dominate in market.
Gotcha. And there's some, I mean, it's just, there's some obvious reasons why, you know, bigger paychecks and often more interesting and more complex work. But then you just sort of balancing that off against the, you know, if you have too much of your revenue tied up in a single client or a single engagement, a small number of large engagements, you know, how does that, what happens with one of them drops away?
Absolutely. And in fact, when you are looking at how much you want to go up market, that's a very important component of it, because having all your eggs in a basket is not necessarily a good business model that's sustainable over the long term.
Right.
So,
But on the other hand, like I said, there's all kinds of other benefits to those larger opportunities. You just want to make sure, like I said, that your basket is balanced.
Yes.
Any other thoughts on the, you know, major things people should be paying attention to? And then I'm going to go back to the mistakes people are making.
The mistakes.
I always think that's,
yeah,
I always,
great.
It's, you know, super valuable stuff you can stop doing today. You can stop making this mistake today. But before we get to those, any other broad takeaways people should have in terms of large opportunity pursuits or anything you would want them to think about before we,
Yep. So there are two critical elements to the strategy up front, and then a third one that I'm going to layer in.
Yeah.
When you are pursuing a large opportunity, the two strategic anchor points are competitors and decision makers.
Okay.
We talked about that a little bit before, but understanding what the competitors are going to be doing and how they're going to execute their strategy, and then uncovering the dynamics and the politics over here, we talked about that.
Right.
And people say to me, well, how do I know about my competitors and what they are going to be doing? And the answer is, you ask the prospect. In the first qualification call, one of the techniques is to get them very comfortable talking to you about your competitors. And when you do that, you transform yourself from a vendor to a consultant, because the reality is that you're supposed to be helping this buyer navigate through what is the right decision for them and putting your own interests on the back burner for now. And when you do that, then you start getting information about the competitor, and you can work with that. And as you get more knowledge about the buyers and the politics, you can work with that. So those are two key anchor points in strategy. There's a third one that is equally important and sometimes surprising to firms, and that is people make business decision based on personal reasons, like always.
Right.
And so if you don't know that, you're going to be naive and you're going to go in there and talk about a better audit.
Right.
When the reality is, let's take two brothers who own a company, 50-50, and they don't get along. And so one of them, his agenda is he wants his favorite accounting firm in there. And the other one, his agenda is that the brother got to pick the law firm, so now he gets to pick the accounting firm.
Right.
So these hidden agendas are really interesting to, once you uncover them, and they make for the raw material of tremendous impact on who, you know, which firm wins the business.
Right.
I sometimes use my favorite story of a firm, when I was at MCI, we were bidding on $38 million contract. Big contract.
Yep.
And I found out that the reason that the head of telecommunications really was, you know, his reason for, you know, for his job, he wanted to be cutting edge and forward thinking among his peers. That was the reason that he chose us, because we positioned our proposal to be cutting edge and forward thinking, and the other two providers didn't. And every single time, if you're looking for the hidden agenda, you can find it as you become better and better at this. If you're never looking for it and you think it's because it's going to be a better audit, then you're sadly mistaken and naive.
I like that idea of thinking of the sales process, the opportunity pursuit process, is kind of a consulting engagement. You're not just here to sell something to somebody. You're here to coach them through the process of solving whatever need they've got. Or puts you in a management. It helps you manage. You're managing this process. You're not just trying to foist the service off on them. You're actually
you got it. In fact, I say that sales is free consulting.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of they're not paying you yet.
Right.
And if you think of it in that way, you'll go into the sales process as a consultant, and you'll go through it as a consultant, and at some point, they will start paying you if you're successful. And when you have that mindset, that's when you're operating at the highest level of opportunity pursuit.
Excellent. All right. Let's give them a couple more mistakes
that
you see people making. In
okay.
One of the things is not asking those questions, not uncovering those the hidden agendas, the personal
that's right, the
personal needs or desires,
yes,
or goals of the people you're selling to. So that's obviously
an
easy mistake to make.
Yeah.
Anything else here?
Oh yeah, I could go on forever. This one is interesting, and that is, you are selling next steps. You are not selling an audit or a tax project. You are selling a next step. You've got to figure out what the next step is, and then sell the next step in order to keep on the path to success.
Gotcha.
And so if you're in there and say, okay, I'm going to come in here, I'm going to talk to them one time and throw a proposal on them, and then we're going to win the business, that's not a next step. The next step is, and there should be several appropriate to the time frame, but the next step is how you keep them engaged, increase the knowledge of the situation on both sides, increase the trust and all those things. And then at some point, and this is one of the biggest mistakes, is proposals that are written way back here when you're only early in the selling process.
Right.
The proposal is not a selling instrument. It is a history book.
Right.
It's a historical record of all the conversations you've had, a confirmation of them. And then when you put the proposal in front of someone, it should be a draft so that you can show it to them and they can be part of the process of editing the proposal, and you're getting the buy-in from them that this is what you two agreed to. And I can't tell you how many of my own prospects say after one call, send me a proposal. And I say, well, we're not quite ready for that yet. What do you mean? We've got some other things that we need to do. What do you mean? I recommend that our next step is that we get on the phone with your head of audit and your head of tax. Maybe I'm talking the managing partner at the time. And the reason for that is fill in the blank. So therefore, I'm selling the appropriate next step, and I'm not laying a document on them that's premature. The thing that you've got to remember is once they get a final written document, they're not going to talk to you anymore. Think about it.
They're going to take that document, go look at it, and shop it around inside.
Yeah, you're done. And you've lost the ability to develop the selling process and lead them to a really good place. And so they're off now in their corner with the door shut, and they're off. Who knows where they are?
Right.
Who knows what they're thinking? But you've lost the ability to persuade and influence at that point.
And who knows how they're misreading your proposal or misunderstanding it, or you don't get a chance to say, well, I know my standard proposal would have this, but I know they're going to ask a question about that. My proposal to be that.
You got it. Gotcha. And they're making all kinds of assumptions, that they may even have a competitor blowing in their ear about, oh, well, you know, and being in a situation of persuasion and influence, and you're not. So I say, Do not put that final written document in front of them until it's absolutely necessary to do so. And if you know how to sell the right next steps and you can get the buy-in, then they're going to take their eye off of, I've got to have a written document. And therefore you're doing what you need to do in order to influence it right. In a good way for their benefit, not just yours.
Well, that's a good point. If you're doing that right, if you're doing this, what you're constantly telling them is, I want to make this better for you. I'm looking after what you want. I want to find out what you need so I can make sure that we're giving you the best.
You got it.
And you're building up your own credibility even before you've had a chance to do any work for them.
Absolutely.
Just by being smart about finding out what they want. All right.
And that, I will tell you, is worth its weight in gold. I just had a prospect last week call me after 6 years, and he said, 6 years ago, you sent me packing. And he started laughing because I recommended him to a practice management consultant right. that he really needed to go in that direction. He said, so you're not going to get rid of me this time so easily, and laughed. But truly now he really is a prospect for
right.
me.
Right.
Back then, no, I needed to get him into the right landing spot. And if you are cognizant of that as a practitioner, you will know all your competitors. And you'll be in a position to not only, when it's not a good fit for you, to get them to the right landing spot, and it will be win-win-win for everybody. And then you'll be known as somebody who's helping the prospect with their problem, regardless of whether you're the one that can solve it or not.
Right.
And that is the epitome of pursuit.
Yeah, well, and that's great. I mean, that goes to, right, you said that's qualifying the lead. They didn't qualify for you, but it's a consulting engagement. You gave them
That's right.
A better result, even though they didn't pay you yet. Soon, though, they will.
Right.
All right. Well, we can probably go on with mistakes, but I think that's a lot of things for people to start looking at if they're doing them. If they're doing those things, stop doing them and start thinking about a different approach to large opportunity pursuit. Gail, I want to thank you for joining us.
Thank you. This is one of my favorite topics. I enjoy it so much. Thanks. Hope your audience does as well.
I'm sure. I bet they will. And thank you guys for listening. We'll probably have you back to talk about more of those mistakes and fill in some of the areas in this, because it is a big topic and we could go on for a long time. But
yeah.
For now, thanks for joining.
Great. Thank you.
And thanks for listening.
Look for new episodes of On the Air with Accounting Today every Monday at AccountingToday.com or subscribe to us on Google Play or iTunes. And if there's a topic you'd like us to explore, let us know by emailing actoday@sourcemedia.com.